Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, committed to being an objective partner for over 425 employers and their brokers, providing self-funded employers with data to manage their health plans. The-Alliance.org. Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. Academic scholarships are automatically offered to eligible students upon admission, and all Luther students receive some form of financial aid. Luther.edu.
A U.S. Senate committee has approved a limited military strike against Syria. What fate does this resolution face in the full Senate and House, and what are the consequences of a U.S. strike on Syria? We'll discuss this story that's dominating the news in this edition of our Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll also discuss other top state, national, and international news of the week with our two guests from different viewpoints and with you. Your views and the stories that you want our guests to discuss are also welcome. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, let me welcome our Week in Review guests. We are happy to have with us Ed Garvey, Madison attorney, political activist, editor of FightingBob.com. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joy.
Also with us, Chris Lotto, former communication director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. He joins us by telephone. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Joy and Ed.
Good morning, Chris.
It's good to have you both here. And Ed, it's especially nice to have you here because BobFest is coming up sometime soon.
I never thought we'd get around to it. I'm so happy that you have. Yeah. Fighting BobFest will start today. This evening is going to be a fundraiser, but also at the Barrymore, we have Bernie Sanders and Jim Hightower and others who will give the kickoff for Fighting BobFest. This will be our 12th. We have, believe it or not, in 12 years, we've always maintained a small profit. Profit's probably the wrong term, just a little bit of money in the bank. So we do charge admission for the program tonight at the Barrymore. But for BobFest on Saturday, we always say it's free to get in, but you have to pay to get out. So we pass the buckets, and frankly, that's how we make our money, is to cover our expenses by asking people to just put money in the bucket.
There we go.
Chris doesn't have that kind of problem.
I did want to get that.
My invitation to speak with Lost in the Mail. Is that it, Ed?
Yeah, what about you? Usually invite some people from the other side of the aisle, too, don't you, Ed?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I think it came in the same package with something that Scott Walker sent me.
Weirdest thing.
Well, I wanted to get that on the table right away because we won't hear from Ed about that for the rest of the show, I'm sure.
Well, you might hear about Bernie Sanders coming.
Anyway, to a very, very serious topic. President Obama is at the G20 summit in St. Petersburg, Russia, trying to round up support from other world leaders on how to deal with Syria. President Obama says he's asking for diplomatic and political support and not necessarily military support. But not all leaders are on the same page. Some aren't even sure that Syrian President Assad was behind the recent chemical weapons attack. Let me start with you, Ed Garvey. What are your thoughts on Syria and what looks to be a push for a U.S. Military strike against Syria?
I think it's a perfect example of what the United States should not do. We are not to be the policeman for the entire world. There, at any given moment, there are some terrible things happening to people around the world in various countries, but it's not necessarily our business. And it seems to me that Obama stuck his foot in it, and he probably would like to withdraw it, but he really isn't kind of a problem, because if the Congress votes no, is he going to go forward? If he does, he's going to be terribly criticized. On the other hand, if they vote yes, what does he do? Does he then say, okay, we're going to go bomb them tomorrow? And what seems clear to me is that there is no game plan to win. I don't know what victory would mean. You know, what are they going to say? I mean, the Republicans have not suddenly decided that that Barack Obama is their president as well as ours.
Your thoughts, Chris?
Well, this is shaping up to be a very dull hour because I believe and support virtually everything that Ed Garvey just said.
Let me add some more.
Well, let me add something. You can chime in and say if you agree. I think, as Ed alluded to, the president faces an uphill climb on a number of fronts here. First of all, there is substantial congressional opposition on both sides. This is not something that boils down to a party line issue. A lot of lawmakers, including those that are very, very strongly pro-Obama and supported Barack Obama in overwhelming numbers, there's little support in those districts, a lot of those districts. There's a national poll by Reuters this week, one of several now, where you have 19% of the American people in this poll saying that they would support intervention in Syria compared to, I think, 56% that say the U.S. should not intervene. We have a number of world leaders who don't really want to have any part of what the U.S. is proposing here. I mean, it's virtually the U.S. at this point standing alone with only France to back them up. And again, the bottom line, this is a mission with no clear aim. There is no clear end game here. Why are we doing this? On the face of it, we're firing off missiles to address a human rights violation. And what is the hoped for result? And also, it's fair to ask, why didn't Obama act months ago? I mean, 2 years ago, he said it was time for Assad to go. And at that time, some 2,000 people were killed in a five-month campaign by the regime. So there's a lot of other ins and outs that we can cover here, but I think that's the bottom line.
You know things are strange when Ed Garvey and James Sensenbrenner are on the same page. There's
strange
something really wild.
Yeah, well, let's listen to President Obama, who says the world's credibility is on the line.
Yeah.
My credibility is not on the line.
Really?
The international community's credibility is on the line. And America and Congress's credibility is on the line because we give lip service to the notion that these international norms are important.
International norm being that the use of chemical weapons is not allowed. So, Chris Lotto, should the use of chemical weapons in Syria be overlooked?
I don't think it should be overlooked, but by the same token, I think it's ironic that we're talking about punishing the use of chemical weapons by firing missiles at them. It seems like there's kind of a contradiction here. Well, we don't like gas, but let's shoot some missiles at them instead. So, should it be overlooked? No, but I think there's at this point anyway, a growing consensus that there are potentially other solutions and that that not all solutions have been exhausted yet, that there may be political solutions here. And again, you have President Obama virtually standing alone right now. He talks about world credibility at stake. Really, when you look at where things are at right now, it really is the president's credibility at stake, whether he wants to believe that and acknowledge it.
Oops, I think we're losing Chris on his line. We'll try to make sure we have a good connection there. But, Ed Garvey, what about that? It's not President Obama's credibility at stake. It's the international community.
Well, if President Bush had done exactly the same thing as the president, we would not hesitate to say that it is indeed his credibility. I think that the president has made it clear that he wants people to look to him for leadership. So when he said that there's a red line, that was an invitation to either for Assad to either give up or to test it. I mean, and one thing I know about negotiations is that the minute you say that there's only a nuclear option or that there's a red line or that there will never be an agreement, it's pretty hard to compromise. So I think it's his problem. And I listen to John Kerry enough. I mean, he's really lecturing with some vigor. And I understand his role is to try to protect the administration's position. But I think he's turning off more people than he's turning on.
Help me understand, Ed and Chris, why would President Obama and John Kerry, for that matter, be taking such a hard stance on this? If his party's against him, the other side of the aisle is against him, the world is against him, why would this president who was not exactly known as a hawk, be taking this position, Ed?
Well, it's hard for me to understand because when Obama was running for president, he talked about getting out of Iraq, which he has done. I talked about the smart war, Afghanistan, which now is coming to an end. And it's almost like, well, now we've got all this stuff ready to go. Let's find another battle that we can get into. And I don't think that the American people believe public officials who say, don't worry, this thing is not going to be boots on the ground. It's not going to be Iraq. It's not going to be Afghanistan. What's it going to be? I mean, I just think it's hard. I mean, again, when we had the I was listening to a discussion with Newt Gingrich and former Governor Richardson from New Mexico, and Richardson looked very uncomfortable, and Newt looked very comfortable. And when he's comfortable, I'm uncomfortable.
Chris?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, this is probably the simplistic way to look at it, and there's probably more to it than we know right now. But on the face of it, it really is a situation where, you know, the president has, you know, sort of drawn his line in the sand, this red line that we've been talking about, and now feels that he has to stick to it. Now, there are underlying issues at stake here as well. There's the thought that, well, if we lob these missiles at Syria now, we're going to teach, you know, others that may use chemical weapons or may have other nefarious plans to be deterred from doing that. So I'm thinking Iran and other nations that, you know, would see that the U.S. actually backed up its words with action and would think twice about doing, you know, something similar. And I think that may be one underlying reason. But again, that's a highly debatable action to take in terms of what the potential outcome might be. You know, we're hearing I was just reading this morning before we got on the call, you know, John McCain in the Senate committee voted in favor of this resolution, and he was just, you know, torn to shreds at a town hall meeting. And I think, again, as I said earlier, this is not something that boils down to party lines. I think a clear majority, Democrat and Republican alike, you know, some certainly in the Wisconsin delegation are willing to listen to more evidence, but you know, the fact is it's not forthcoming. And it feels to a lot of people like our reasons for talking about getting involved are extremely shaky, and that the administration has not done nearly enough at this point to make its case and to prove that this is a valid response.
But what's the case? I mean, you know, they say, well, we haven't done a good job making the case. I don't know what the case is. I mean, it really is. It's just mind-blowing as far as I'm concerned. I'll be delighted tomorrow to listen to Bernie Sanders and Tammy Baldwin and Mark Pocan and others who are going to have to make decisions with respect to this. Of course, they'll be at Bobfest, Chris, in case you want to come and ask him some more questions.
Duly noted.
Well, you know, I heard Mark Pocan was on this show a couple of weeks ago saying the president has to come to Congress for, you know, for authority to do this. And I heard him yesterday say that he is not convinced. He does not believe the administration made the case. Senator Ron Johnson this week voted no when the Senate Foreign Relations Committee authorized the use of force in Syria, a 10-7 vote. So, I mean, you're on the same side as Ron Johnson, Ed Garvey.
Yes. I'm going to have to reexamine my position.
But
it is strange bedfellows, though. I mean, and we've made this point before. And, you know, to Senator Johnson's, you know, I'm going to say credit in this case because he has indicated this week that his vote is not a done deal and that he's actually leaving the door open to ultimately supporting action against Syria. But I think he's really speaking for a lot of us, apparently Ed Garvey included, that there are too many unanswered questions. You know, the administration has not really thought through the potential effectiveness not only of the strike itself, but what all the repercussions of it are going to be. And you know, again, to his credit, we're not seeing him act necessarily as a partisan here. I think he's asking the right questions that a lot of us have right now, and the problem is he's not getting the right answers.
Now, next week, the Senate is going to take up this resolution, the House perhaps the week after that. I'm reading that maybe it'll pass in the Senate, but the House is another story. What do you think, Chris Lotto?
I think it's very questionable. We've seen these kind of head counts in Congress right now, and while there are, you know, pockets of support out there, it's very pretty clearly either undecided or not willing to support it at all. And I think that with every day that goes by, you know, the administration is frankly losing credibility on this issue. And you know, we could well see that the House is ultimately not willing to support it. I mean, that's the stuff we're seeing coming out of Washington right now.
What do you think, Ed?
Well, it's just going to be fascinating to watch, because I think that the administration is going to have to change its position between now and the debate. I'm not sure in what they're going to say, but you can't just say, well, this isn't Iraq and it's not Afghanistan and it's not boots on the ground, unless there's something more than that. People want some assurances that it's either going to go through the UN, the Arab League, or both, or through NATO. I mean, for heaven's sake, when the Brits made their decision to stay out, that was should have been a wake-up call for the Obama administration, because the Brits are always with us when it comes to international affairs.
Ed Garvey is a Madison attorney, editor of FightingBob.com. Chris Lotto is a GOP campaign consultant. They are both our guests for this edition of The Week in Review. We'll take your calls and comments and questions about Syria. We'll move on to some other issues after that. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is The Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Ed Garvey and Chris Lotto. And if you would like to join our conversation, our review of the top state, national, and international news stories of the week, you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our first caller is Steve in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. And Ed, I must say, in all the years that I've been listening, I think this is almost the first time I've ever disagreed with you.
No, really?
when this whole thing started, my knee-jerk reaction was absolutely no military, because I didn't see the point in it. But the more I got to thinking about it, the more I thought that Assad has no reason to negotiate. And when people start talking about negotiations and political solutions, I mean, as long as he's got the Russians behind him, and he obviously doesn't care about his own people, I don't know why he should bother to worry about the rest of the world.
Well, I respect your views, particularly those that came before this one, since you always agreed with me before. Frankly, none of these are easy issues to deal with, but it seems to me that those of us who have been advocating for peace over the years are in a position where we're now asked to trust the administration to be different than all the other presidents, to not lie to us about the intelligence, and to not send troops where they shouldn't be going. So I just don't have enough faith right now in the government to believe that that's going to happen. And frankly, you know, Assad's a bad guy. But when I saw that picture in yesterday's New York Times of the six naked men about to be shot by our guys, the people we're supporting, started to raise more questions in my mind about, are these the people we really want to have as victors? I mean, it's a very difficult road to walk.
Chris, your thoughts on Assad has no reason to negotiate?
Yeah, and there are so many other, you know, thorny issues, and obviously I think callers like the one who just chimed in are coming from this of an angle, and it's interesting to just watch, because a lot of folks on the left are kind of coping with this issue, with this president, and there's a sort of national burnout, and it's, you know, it's true in both parties and people of all stripes over Iraq, and there's a real wariness right now for you know, to get the U.S. involved in anything that could turn into another, Iraq-Afghanistan situation. I mean, people are, you know, for lack of a better word, burned out on that notion. And so this is a case where, when we're talking about Syria, people are going to be looking for a lot more evidence and proof and a real justification for why to get in, you know, why the U.S. should get involved. Assad's a bad guy. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that, but to Ed's point, you know, how does this end? I mean, if the U.S. decides to strike militarily, suddenly, you know, do we end with Al Qaeda back in power in Syria? I mean, this is an action that threatens to actually, you know, to help their cause. A number of Syrian rebels are Al Qaeda associated. They also commit atrocities. You know, the president is on record as saying that, you know, with this military action, that he would hit Syria and then, you know, and then would back off. But again, the resolution is not very clear on that, and it seems like it's much more of an open case than just a few missiles being fired at Syria, you know, would imply. And then we have, you know, folks like there's a Democratic representative in Florida, Alan Grayson. He is accusing the administration this week of manipulating intelligence and failing to release any backing evidence to actually support the push for military action. So, there's a lot of these unanswered questions out there, and there are a lot of folks on the left who, you know, the last caller notwithstanding, have a real serious problem with what the president's proposing. Yeah.
Well, I have real problems in part because I can't see an end game involved here from the point of view of the administration. I mean, if you're not going to do this and you're not going to do that and you're not going to have troops and you're not going to, what are you going to do? And Alan Grayson, I think, has been making the points very strongly and very well. But that's the part that really bothers me. If the administration said, well, here's our plan, but we know after shock and awe that no matter what we do in terms of missiles and bombs and so on, a strong country can still react and respond. And the same thing I suspect is going to happen here in Syria.
Barry in Crystal Lake says that he thinks Obama painted himself into a corner with the red line talk and is now looking for a graceful way out. Do you sense that the president is looking for a way out, Ed?
No, I think he's just going to ride this horse as hard as he can. I mean, listening to John Kerry, I mean, is really quite remarkable. They're dedicated to the proposition that somehow this is going to work. Now, you have to give the president credit for going to Congress. Too many times presidents have just taken it upon themselves to involve us in wars. But that aside, it's still going to be a tremendous problem because I don't see any answer. I mean, it's not like if you knock out one missile, everything's going to be okay, or if you somehow disrupt their supply lines, that will end the war. It's not going to. And so it seems like there's cognitive dissonance here that you get the administration saying, well, we're not going to risk very much, but at the same time, they're telling us that they're going to be.
Yeah. Well, Chris, what do you think is going to, if Congress says no to a limited military strike in Syria, do you think the administration would proceed anyway?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. And just thinking about what the last listener, the point that the last listener made about the president looking for a graceful way out, you know, thinking about it, congressional rejection of action in Syria would give him potentially a graceful way out. He can say, well, I didn't have the backing of Congress, therefore my hands are tied. There's nothing I can do. Now, we all know that's not true. The president can still decide to go it alone, and he would truly be going it alone based on where everybody's at on this issue. You know, if a clear minority of Congress doesn't support it and a clear majority of the American people don't support Syria, and France is the only one willing to stand next to President Obama saying, let's do this. The president is standing alone. So it's hard to say what would happen at this point, but he does have an out here potentially, and Congress would actually let him off the hook if they decided not to support Syria. That is one option.
Martha in Menominee is with us now. Hello, Martha. Martha. Oh, too bad Martha hung up. Martha was going to say that it was odd for her to be agreeing with Senator Ron Johnson, but thinks we just need more information. Is that where you are too, Ed? We need more information, or would there be any information that would make you agree with a strike?
There's plenty of information out there, for heaven's sakes, you know, the intelligence services and so on. And our communications with governments in the Middle East. I don't think any more information is needed. I think what we need to do is to find out how we could possibly broker some kind of a peaceful resolution.
Mm-hmm. Chris, some final thoughts?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I think it's as difficult and painful a situation as it is over there. It is an ugly civil war that is claiming lives, and you know, you can understand the pull of the U.S. saying we need to do something in addition to the international ramifications of doing something versus not doing something, or saying you're going to do something and then frankly dithering about it. You know, it's a very thorny issue, but at least at this point, based on what we do know, and as Ed said, there's a lot of information out there. You know, it's hard to see a scenario where this is an action that is worth supporting.
Well, we'll talk more about Syria as the story unfolds, but we need to move on to some other topics during this week in review. President Obama has met with the leaders of Mexico and Brazil. The leaders were pretty upset over the word that the NSA monitored their communications. Apparently, Eric Snowden leaked that tidbit of information. Brazil responded by pulling the plug on an upcoming U.S. visit. Ed Garvey, what do you make of the NSA now spying on Mexico and Brazil?
Well, I'm appalled that the administration would be doing what they are doing for our own citizens to begin with. I mean, millions of phone calls and emails and so on are somehow being categorized and filed away. But it would be foolish to think that we would stop at the border because their mission is to make sure that there isn't going to be any further attacks on the United States. So I'm sure that the Brazilians and the Mexicans are not surprised, but they're not very happy about it either.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, making the assumption that what is being reported here by this journalist is accurate, and then I think it begs the question, you know, well, first of all, did this violate international law? I know the Mexican Foreign Ministry is claiming that, you know, this type of practice is contrary to the United Nations Charter and the International Court of Justice. I think there needs to be more information about what exactly is going on here. But, you know, this really does the Obama administration no favors, and frankly, does the U.S. no favors in the eyes of the rest of the world. You know, if it begs the question of can the U.S. be trusted when it's spying on other world leaders, and for what purpose?
Well, and Germany was raising the same issue a week ago or so. When all of our allies are being, bugged, it doesn't exactly make for a good working relationship.
Yeah. Well, the NSA stuff, Syria dominating the G20 summit going on in St. Petersburg. Is there any economic business that this G20 summit is going to be dealing with, Ed?
Well, I'm sure they're going to be dealing with a number of topics, but it's the elephant in the room. They're going to have to come to grips with something like Syria before they can move on. But again, given the problems that the United States faces right now, unemployment, wage disparities, lack of support for people to have the right to collectively bargain, threats to our public school system, threats to the university system, we need to take care of our own problems at home. And you know, you can go to the G20 or you can go to other meetings with people abroad, but the fact is that when the sun comes up in the morning, the administration is going to have to deal with these real economic problems that we have right here at home.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Yeah, it's a fascinating situation. I mean, there's no love lost between Russia and the U.S. right now, and you have Vladimir Putin coming out and calling John Kerry a liar. Now, Russia is Syria's ally, so they're going to have to kind of stand behind what's going on over there. But you know, this summit is going on basically it's going on in Russia. I mean, it's you know, you have all these world leaders coming to Vladimir Putin's house basically, and having to you know, try and discuss all of these issues. But clearly, it's Syria is going to be the one that's dominating, and the Obama administration is using it as an opportunity to try and lobby and generate world support. But, you know, I don't see how you focus on other things when this is such an immediate pressing issue that really the administration has pushed. I mean, again, you talk about Obama backing himself into a corner. you know, this is where he finds himself.
I'm Joy Cardine with Chris Lotto, former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, also a GOP campaign consultant, and Ed Garvey, a Madison attorney, political activist, editor of FightingBob.com. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. It's time now for the Week in Review quiz. The news website The Daily Beast came out this week with a list of 9 Republican women that it says are breathing new life into the GOP. Which Wisconsin woman was featured on that list? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you would like to answer our quiz question. We'll give you 5 minutes or so to call in. You can also email us, talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers. We will announce the answer and the winner at the end of the show. The winner will receive a book of his or her choice that we featured on the program recently. So give it a go on that. This is the Week in Review, where we review the top issues in the news each week, state, national, and international issues, with two guests from different perspectives. And today we are happy to have with us Chris Lotto, who is a GOP campaign consultant, and Ed Garvey, a Madison attorney, political activist, editor of FightingBob.com. And he is also the chair of Fighting Bob Fest, which gets underway tonight. Ed, and you're stepping down, though, as chair of the event.
Yeah, we started this thing 12 years ago. It's been a success. We've motivated people. We've inspired people. We've had some of the best speakers in the country here, from Bobby Kennedy to Bernie Sanders and Jim Hightower. You just name them, and they've been here. And I think we've got to take the concept out beyond the confines of Dane County or Milwaukee County, and get people in the various counties to have representatives who will coordinate their activities and help to organize troops to get out the vote. In North Carolina, they call it Moral Monday, and every Monday they meet and they talk about the issue of the day and go from there. That's kind of what we're going to be pushing at BobFest tomorrow, is to say that we need to go beyond just having the speeches and the meetings and the festivals, and get down to the nitty-gritty work of getting people to vote in large numbers. In fact, numbers so large that the money that the Koch brothers are going to pour into the gubernatorial race can be nullified.
Yeah. Briefly, and then I'll get Chris Lotto to weigh in, too. How fired up is the progressive base, Ed, or is our you know, is the Republican base as fired up?
Well, I think the base is fired up among progressives, but I think there's also a sense of some doom and gloom based on what's been happening at the national level as well as locally. So we need Fighting Bob Fest every year to sort of re-energize and get together and get out there and get moving. And I think that having, like, what we might call the people's legislature with county representatives all over the state of Wisconsin, helping to get that message out. Because if we can't win by getting out the vote, we can't win, because the Republicans are going to have so much money. I actually talked to Tommy Thompson the other day. He was there to honor Dave Zweifel for a number of years of writing columns for the Cap Times. And he said, isn't it ridiculous how much money we're talking about? And how much are we talking about? One consultant said that whoever decides to run as the Democrat must raise $40 million. Well, I got news for you. There isn't a single Democrat in the state that could raise $40 million. So we can't go into that fight. We're going to lose it. What we're going after then is to register voters and get them out to vote and make sure that we have the greatest turnout that we've ever had.
Your thoughts on who's fired up, Chris?
Well, Republicans absolutely are fired up, I mean, for a number of reasons, but I think in Wisconsin, it starts at the top, and there is going to be a very strong, passionate outpouring of support for Scott Walker, and it's going to trickle down from there. You know, I think the Republicans are ready for a very strong organized effort. There is nobody out there on the Democrat side who is really positioned to take on Walker for a whole variety of reasons, including the fact that, frankly, at that level, the Democrats right now don't have a particularly deep bench. So I think that hurts them. And I think, you know, also with, you know, the midterms, it's in some senses probably going to be a referendum on Barack Obama as well. So I think that benefits Republicans up and down the ticket as well.
Well, let's move on to some other news. In state news, Governor Walker's administration says it made a mistake in giving Capitol Police Chief David Irwin a retroactive pay raise, and it will take back the $720. The acknowledgement comes after Walker insisted that everything was on the up and up. Irwin was given an 11.7% raise by being transferred to a so-called fake job and then back into his current post. Chris Lotto, do you think that Walker did the right thing in taking that retro pay increase back?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, and I think by doing that, he's admitting that there was a mistake made and that the administration made it. I mean, this is, you know, in the grand scheme of things, rather small, and we can point to a countless number of cases of both political parties engaging in this kind of thing when they're at the top. So I think, to the governor's credit, they recognize that a mistake was made and moved to correct it.
Ed?
Well, you know, when a mistake is made like that, if they admit that there was a mistake and take it back, you have to give them credit. But as I look at what's happening when Chris says we don't have much of a bench, I mean, the simple fact is if you try to convince somebody to run for governor or for the U.S. Senate or for Congress, and they say, what do I need? If you say $30 million or $40 million, there aren't many Democrats who can fill that bill. So to some extent, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin has said so far, well, okay, we're simply going to play the money game and say that whoever has enough money to self-fund a campaign should be the nominee. I don't think that's the way to go. I think Gaylord Nelson suggesting putting down the tin cup is a better way.
Well, here's another story that we learned about today. At the request of Governor Walker, the DNR is rescinding a $500,000 grant to a politically connected sportsman's group. The money was supposed to go to United Sportsmen of Wisconsin, which was to recruit sportsmen, men and women, for hunting, trapping, and fishing. The grant came under scrutiny when questions were raised about the group's federal tax-exempt status. Apparently, United Sportsmen did not secure that status from the IRS and said it did in a hearing. After, how big a deal is this, Ed Garvey?
Well, it pales in comparison with the high-speed rail that the governor turned down. I was talking to some people yesterday. I still can't figure out what he was thinking about when he turned down that money. Chris may have a perspective on it, but I can't figure it out. So I think some of these are minor issues. The DNR thing was so heavily handed. I mean, for God's sake, since when do we have to have a 501c3 organization teaching kids how to hunt and fish? I mean, it just didn't make common sense.
Mm-hmm. That grant should be rescinded, Chris Lotto?
You know, again, I think it's a case of the administration recognizing that that's not where the money should go and moving to correct it. I mean, there were other sort of issues at stake here. I guess there was some question about the leader of the group who apparently, you know, hunted illegally a number of years ago and was penalized for that. So I think it was definitely under a cloud. And again, the administration, you know, course corrected and did the right thing.
Do you think Walker will pull out of the gubernatorial race then, Chris?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Let's talk about this legislation that had unveiled on Friday, had a public hearing on Wednesday, and was voted on in a Senate a committee on Thursday. The Senate Mining Committee gave the thumbs up this week to a bill that would close thousands of acres around a potential mine near Lake Superior, the proposed iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. The full Senate may vote on this next month. We did have on the show Republican State Senator Tom Tiffany on Wednesday morning. He said that this bill is necessary to protect the mining company's workers. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
these aren't your garden variety protesters. These are people that will go to great lengths to disrupt civil society, and they promise that they're going to be back. And so we really do, I think that we have to be able to protect these workers.
He was referring to a raid by protesters on June 11th, where a group of about a dozen protesters shouted at the mine company workers, and one of them wrestled a camera away from one of the workers. So Tom Tiffany says that this is needed to protect those workers from eco-terrorists. Ed Garvey, that's the term
I think used. Their biggest concern is that the demonstrators might break into song at any moment. And what scares the bejesus out of the Walker people is that people are going to be happy. And the absurdity of saying that you're going to block the public entrance into public lands because somebody used a swear word at one of the workers, I didn't realize that these Republicans were so sensitive. Maybe we needed some sensitivity training or something, but I think it's ridiculous. And, you know, we will be talking a lot about mining because that is going to be a major issue in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Your thoughts, Chris Lotto, on whether nearly 4,000 acres of land around that mining site needed to be closed off to public access?
Well, yeah, and here's what we know. We know that there was an incident back in June. Protesters made threats. One stole equipment. They said they would be back in larger numbers. And I guess it begs the question, you know, what should be done? If this is an overreaction, and look, the case could be made that it is an overreaction. I think that's a debatable point, and that's why this is, this is a bill that's through committee but hasn't gone through both houses yet. And I'm sure there will be a lot more discussion about whether this is an overreaction. You know, the bill's author is making the case that it's about public safety. The mining company is vowing to work to keep as much of the land open as possible. You know, frankly, part of this is an example of the protesters shooting themselves in the foot, figuratively speaking, with, you know, really thuggish behavior. I mean, these people were, to use Senator Bob Jouk's word, acting like buffoons, and they were hurting their case, and that kind of forced this protective action.
Bob Jouk was also on the show on Wednesday. He called them idiots, but didn't think that they were necessarily dangerous eco-terrorists. He did have some strong criticism for Senator Tiffany for the way this bill was brought forth.
What Senator Tiffany is doing is giving the finger to every Wisconsin citizen, and it is an embarrassment to the legislative institution. What he ought to remember is you don't schedule these hearings for the convenience of one company. He says it's a narrow bill. You bet it's a narrow bill.
He says this bill is narrowly crafted to benefit the mining company monetarily. Chris Lotto, your thoughts on that and how quickly this bill came forward. Are you there, Chris?
I'm sorry. Yes. I mean, it did come forward fairly quickly. I think that, again, this is a committee action. This is not a final vote. There are going to be more opportunities for people to chime in here. So, you know, while there was this immediate action in support, there's still a lot more time and opportunity to debate here. And again, I'm not saying that this isn't an overreaction, and perhaps, you know, if there is enough public outcry that there may be some other alternative solution to be crafted here. But, you know, frankly, I think, you know, folks like Bob Jouk are gonna be yelling and screaming about this if it's 100 acres or 1,000 acres.
Ed?
Well, you know, it seems to me if we had a governor committed to the public lands and to protect our environment and to tell the mining company, listen, you're going to have to obey the rules here, we'd be a lot better off. You could use eminent domain to seize this property and turn it back to the public, and I think that ought to be one of the options. But the company has acted in very bad faith, and they're going to find that the people of Wisconsin are not going to sit by and watch this out-of-state corporation destroy the beauty of the state. I mean, we are the state of Gaylord Nelson and Aldo Leopold, and not the state of Scott Walker.
We have
Ed is kind of making a good point here in the sense that no matter what happens with this case, those who oppose mining are going to be very vociferous about their opposition. Every step of the way, this kind of thing is going to happen. So, you know, nothing is going to be easy here.
We have Marty in Douglas County with us. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. I'm not sure I can really add anything more to what's already been said about this issue other than Senator Jouk and Senator
Tiffany.
Who was the gentleman from Racine?
Oh, I'm sorry. Tim Cullen?
Senator Layman. Had another amendment to the bill that would reduce the restriction to 100 yards. So, in fact, Chris Lotto just said that Jouk would have been against anything. No, he actually had another solution to this. Railroaded and shameful are the two words I can think of to describe this whole situation regarding this bill. And keep an eye out, people in Wisconsin. This isn't the first or last time that the Republican legislature is just going to be able to roll over us no matter what we want to have happen.
Yeah, we're lucky if they even tell us who drafts the bills that the Republicans are pushing through the legislature and to the governor's desk. Mining is a serious issue. I don't think they're approaching it properly, and it's going to be with us. One of the things, you know, Chris was saying, well, the demonstrators will be back. I sure hope so. I mean, it seems to me that we have all sorts of ways to try to change public policy, but when one of them is taken away from us, namely elections, because of the amount of money that the mining companies and the Koch brothers can put into the pot, we've sort of lost that outlet. So I see nothing wrong with demonstrators raising the roof and telling these people that we don't want a 400 or 4 mile gash in our land in northern Wisconsin.
Chris, a brief read.
I just don't know what Democrats would do if they didn't have the Koch brothers as a boogeyman. I mean,
we'd pick on you, Chris.
Fall back. Yeah, I know, right?
Well, we're almost out of time, and I wanted to get both of you to react to the announcement yesterday from Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen. He says he's ready to retire. He's not going to run for re-election. No one wants to compromise anymore. Very briefly, Ed, your thoughts on that?
Well, Tim was saying what I think a lot of legislators are thinking, and others who are thinking about running for public office. It's very tough if you got to go out there and raise. I mean, think about a state senate seat, $2 million, $3 million to win a state senate seat. Have you ever watched the state senate in action? I mean, do you really want to be part of that group and have to raise $3 million? So I don't blame Tim, but we're going to have to deal with public financing of campaigns, or we're not going to have any quality people running.
Yeah, very briefly, Chris.
Well, I think this is more about, you know, Tim Cullen's taking heat from Democrats for being too moderate and too willing to compromise, and you know, for example, attempting to work with the Walker administration during the collective bargaining battle. I mean, this is a guy who Tommy Thompson appointed health secretary back in the day, and it's obvious that Tim Cullen feels out of step with a state legislature rather than has such sharply drawn battle lines. I mean, you know, that said, this is a solidly Democratic district, and it's likely going to stay Democrat.
We have 30 seconds to go. Do you happen to know, Chris Lotto, which female politician from Wisconsin the Daily Beast says is helping remake the Republican Party?
Okay, I swear this is true, but I guessed it before I looked it up. I cheated a little bit, but obviously Rebecca Clayfish, our fine lieutenant governor.
That's right. That's the answer.
You cheated a little bit.
We got to go. Chris Lotto and Ed Garvey, thank you so much for being with us. Greta in Cottage Grove, congratulations for being our quiz winner. This is the Ideas Network.